By January 2025, the U.S. immigrant population reached a record high of some 53.3 million. This includes people from over 200 countries and territories, with every global region represented. Greetings again, I'm Adam Morgan. America's largest immigrant groups come from Mexico, India, and China, with significant numbers also from Europe, Canada, and sub-Saharan Africa. Collectively, 93 million people, or 28% of the total U.S. population. Deporting 93 million will never work, but what does work is supporting them to become citizens who contribute to the nation, which is what many of them are already doing. One of the significant organizations here in Colorado providing support and assistance to immigrants and refugees joining America, along with offering translations and interpretation services to companies and governments for more than 47 years, is the Spring Institute. On this edition, we continue our conversation with the CEO and president of Spring, Ms. Paula Schrieffer.
The CRIM coalition that you mentioned specifically has for a little over a year now been kind of trying to identify ways to encourage and bring more culturally diverse individuals into the behavioral health sector. Yeah. So that we can increase the pool of providers. So that's really what that work has focused on.
You mentioned health a couple of times there with the mental health response. How's your partnership with Denver Health going with the physicians and the international ones, welcoming them back home? Do they have concerns, too, about the way immigration status is being looked at now?
Everybody has concerns, I would say, but that program has been amazing, and we are just so lucky to be working with Denver Health on that program. We, for years, have worked with internationally trained doctors and sort of coach them on how to get through the process of getting relicensed. And it's very, very difficult to match to residencies here. And unfortunately, international doctors do have to rematch and kind of start that whole process over again. They have to pass the board exams and match to residencies. And it can be very time consuming and difficult because they're not coming up through the U.S. medical school system. So we started this partnership a little over 2 years ago with Denver Health, where they provide this amazing clinical training program for a select number of folks in our program. So we kind of work together, and it's competitive, and they apply to get these clinical training spots. But Denver Health works with them over a 9-month period and three different clinical training rotations. We've had two groups go through it now, two groups of four, so 8 people total. And then they all apply for residencies, and the match season is in March. So we just went through the second match season, and all 8 individuals who've gone through the program have matched to residencies. And most importantly, 7 of them matched here in Colorado.
Wow.
So we're just so thrilled with that program and with the fact that we've got now and they're matching all over the state. So we've got a couple of folks in Pueblo, a couple of folks out on the Western Slope, folks working in underserved areas of our state, and now they've got these amazing, well-qualified, you know, physicians to go and work in those areas. So it's been just a tremendous success.
Oh,
there's a current group that the last 4 folks are in the program now, and they'll finish up this fall, and then they will be looking to match next year in March. So, but we're very hopeful. It's just been a great success.
There's a topic I don't think that we have touched upon before, and having been a member of the Colorado Commission for the Aging, intercultural aging, is that starting to be a concern now among the immigrants and the refugees that are here, older adults, and what they're doing and what their needs are to get them the services and support they need?
You know, I mean, across the board, providing services and programs for older adults has always been difficult for all adult populations, older adult populations. It's the least funded program area in the nonprofit world. It's just really hard to get folks interested in it and funding it. And so we've been really fortunate. We've had some funding from the Next 50 initiative here in Colorado that has allowed us to provide English combating social isolation classes for older adult immigrant and refugee members of our communities. And it has just been fantastic. When you come to a country as an older person, it's so much harder, to learn the language. You've lost so much from your home community. And these classes are such a wonderful way for them to connect with one another while they are gaining English skills so that they can also be more active out in their communities and interact with their neighbors and folks at the grocery store and all that stuff. So it's really a neat program and a neat initiative.
Well, that's tremendous. That's tremendous. You have another program called HIPPE, Home Visiting School Readiness for Kids. Is that still working okay? Because I understand a number of children, because of what they've been seeing with ICE taking parents, are really concerned about that.
Yeah, it's made the HIPPE program, I think, even more important. So it's a program, initially we started it because we knew that so many of our community members were not able to enroll their children in some kind of preschool or early childhood education program because of many reasons, again, lack of access, lack of funding, prior to the universal preschool passing in Colorado. So we started HIPPE, Home Instruction for Parents of Preschool Youngsters, snappy little name.
Yes, it is. Very good. Very clever.
So that we could bring individuals directly into parents' homes and work with the parents to help them be their children's first educator and to prepare them for kindergarten and make sure that they're not behind when they start school. And so it's really neat. There's a whole wonderful curriculum that has been developed over the years. The program coincides with the regular academic year, regular school year. And so they go through about 9 months of classes, and it really boosts children's early literacy skills as well as their socio-emotional skills and parenting skills. And, we're able to hire home visitors who can go and instruct in the homes with the parents in the languages that those parents speak, and then the books are in English. And so they're also starting to learn English and gain literacy skills. It's a really wonderful program.
Good, good. One other thing I wanted to ask you about that crossed my mind after the last time that we talked, you do a lot to support immigrants and refugees. Do you have any classes or any presentations along the way for regular American people which teaches them and shows them the importance of understanding across languages and cultures and how they can use it in their lives here, which just may be in the opposite direction? I don't think anybody's doing that.
It's such a great question. We don't do something exactly like that, although we do often get out and speak to church groups or mm-hmm. school groups and that kind of stuff and certainly talk about the kind of work that we do. We do have one specific training program that's kind of neat that really helps organizations understand how to actually effectively use interpretation and the different kinds of interpretation that exist. And it's really fantastic. And it really walks providers of interpretation through some exercises to understand, for instance, the big differences between simultaneous and consecutive interpretation and how difficult simultaneous interpretation is. And it walks people through exercises where, the instructor will actually say a few sentences in English in the language they understand and ask the people to kind of repeat it back as much as they can. And it's difficult to do even in your own language. Mm-hmm. So that much more difficult when you're actually having to interpret a different language in your head and repeat that back out. But it's a great course. It's typically a full day And our clients who use interpretation, whether they're government agencies or law firms or you name it, health providers, really have found it incredibly helpful. And it also looks at issues of, you know, cultural differences and biases and how to deal with some of those when they might come up in a situation where you're providing interpretation.
In doing the research, I heard that there was, or read, that there was some anti-black racism that goes on in immigration courts. And I think we now have a statewide law which helps or puts together an immigration legal defense fund. Are we really seeing some of those things where maybe Haitian immigrants are four times as likely to face detention and or deportation there? So you have that kind of racism that's going on in immigration courts?
You know, it's hard to say, I think, whether it is happening because of racial differences, but certainly, you know, for instance, if you look at the refugee, you know, resettlement program, which has been mostly shut down, but the only people that are currently being resettled are white South Africans, Afrikaners. And so many people wonder, that's interesting. Why are, you know, many of the refugee-producing countries are countries where people are not white, and yet no one seems to be being brought from those countries anymore. I don't know the impact that may be having in courts. What I do know is that, and it's always been true, is that there is a huge difference in whether or not an asylum case or a case in deciding removal proceedings, there's a huge difference whether or not the individual has legal representation. But it's very difficult to get legal representation. It is not provided, as it is in the regular justice system, it is not provided to individuals claiming asylum or involved in the immigration courts. And so in the past, you know, if you were able to either get pro bono legal services or you could afford to hire a lawyer, the chances were very good that your asylum request would be ultimately decided in favor, although the system has been backlogged for a long time. That is not necessarily the case now, and that's partly because we have seen actual directives coming down telling judges that they need to be deporting more people. We've seen a huge number of judges fired or kind of allowed to retire and not being replaced. So the court system does seem to be very much not acting on the basis of the claim, but on sort of a political priority to deport as many people as possible.
How can the community and individuals help support your forthcoming Intercultural Champions awards that are going to be coming up in a couple of months?
Oh my gosh! Well, I would just encourage people to come, show up, show our immigrant and refugee community that Colorado really, really values the contributions that these community members bring us. Mm-hmm. If you are in a financial position to do so, you can sponsor us. Show up, show your support for this community. Let them know that that Colorado welcomes immigrants.
Ms. Paula Schrieffer, CEO and President of the Spring Institute. They provide translation and interpretation services and support for companies and government, while also providing support to immigrants and refugees becoming American citizens. Many thanks to her again for her time and insights for this edition. Now, add to your calendar the Spring Institute's June 25th Intercultural Champion Awards Luncheon. Nurturing intercultural mental health is the theme. Check out information online at springinstituteoneword.org. I'm Adam Morgan. Do keep in touch, and many thanks to you as well for sharing a few moments of your weekend with us.